Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Dig. I am your host, Aaron Makem, and as per usual, because it's me, I'm going to break my movie rule. This week, we're going to talk about Terminator Genisys, which came out in 2015, which is only a couple of years ago. Why I decided to do this film. I had missed the opportunity to see this movie in a theater, and I really wanted to. As those of you that have been listening to the podcast for any length of time, know that the Terminator is one of my all-time favorite movies. Why? It is because it was the first movie that I had seen where we did a time travel thing where we went back in time to kill somebody's mother before they were born. And I found the concept so mind-bending to me and so brilliant that I just got caught up in the science fiction aspect. It helps that we have like the action and horror going on as well. But for me, the selling point was the time travel aspect. Now, I know this has been done probably, 100 times in films, but for me, this was the first time that I had seen this. And I talk about this a lot on the show, how everybody, movies come out, and as older people who have seen a lot of movies, we get kind of jaded because we're like, this has been done. But it's always somebody's first time, right, seeing something like this. And that particular film, whatever it may be, will be a big deal to them because they'll remember that this is the first time that they encountered this type of plot or story point. So the Terminator has always been the top of my list. And when I saw Terminator 2, this was pretty much pre-internet days. I mean, there was internet, but it was pretty, it wasn't very, it wasn't everywhere like it is now. And I read nothing about this movie. I just knew that I wanted to see it because I liked the first one so much. My wife and I went to see it. And I remember we were about 15 minutes into the film and I was like, wait a minute, the Terminator is not the bad guy. And she looked at me and she's like, yeah, didn't you know that? And I was like, no, I had no idea. I'm like, I just assumed that he was going to be the bad guy. And it was so cool what they had done. It was so different. And the whole time travel aspect kind of allows you to do a lot of different things. So Terminator Genisys, obviously, we had Terminator 3, which was not good. And it continued to muddle up the timeline is my problem. My problem isn't that you could try to stick a sequel movie on there. But my problem is that if you're going to lower the value if you make a film that muddles the timeline. We had Terminator Salvation, which I rather enjoyed, and it could be kind of its own thing, and I kind of dug that. And then obviously we have the TV series of Sarah Connor Chronicles, which was more of about John's upbringing and the life that he had led and seeing how things were for him growing up. So that brings us to Genisys. Now, I didn't see it in a theater, and I saw it after the fact, after it was available on video. And I listened to the critics and everybody complaining and talking about, all the movies so horrible. And I expected, I'm like, how can it be worse than Terminator 3? And I watched it, and I rather liked it. And I don't think this movie gets enough credit for the fact that they took the time travel aspect and they put it to good use here. Obviously, there's things you have to do because, it's not – time travel is always very confusing, and they can make up their own rules as part of – is there a set point in time that cannot be modified? And, we see a lot of time travel shows on television today and, a lot of movies where they're like, you can't see yourself or you can't there are set points that there's no way you could ever change them, things like that. And they have never really established that here. And so because of that, I felt that this movie the movie worked fine. So with that being said, I want to give a couple of stats here. And, Schwarzenegger has said that he is not done with the Terminator franchise. And this movie, on IMDb, it gets a 6.5 out of 10, which I think is rather low because I thought the movie had a lot of great aspects, had a great science fiction aspect. It had coming back and touching on these characters. We had a reboot of the characters because we had younger actors playing the characters that we know. We had plenty of action, some new technology. We had a lot of things going on here. Unfortunately, the budget for this movie was pretty darn high. And, you know, it's saying that the budget was $155 million and that the opening weekend it only made $28 million. And it's saying that the gross and the theater was $89 million. And as we know, this doesn't count home video and things like that. I actually bought my version, my copy of Genesis on Christmas of 2 years ago, and it was $10 because they were having a huge sale and I couldn't pass it up. So and I bought it, and I actually since I'd already seen it, it wasn't until I started getting ready to do this show that I actually opened it. That's kind of how I am. I come across deals and I buy them, and then I get around to watching when I get around to watching them. So it was kind of nice because it comes with a digital code, so you can use it twice. Some of these movies you can use them twice. You can get an iTunes one, and then you can also use your streaming one for Ultraviolet or whatever. And I prefer the iTunes ones. I'm used to using those ones because you actually download the film before you watch it, so you get the full HD. Up until recently, my internet has not been that great. It's still not that great, but it's way better than what it was. So now the streaming things I can do and still get them in HD and stuff like that. But it's kind of nice to be able to have multiple versions. You know, I can have, you know, the disc and all that as well. So that's kind of what's going on here. We have we have a new John Connor, played by Jason Clark, who I think did an excellent job. A new Kyle Reese, played by Jay Courtney. He's what I know him from is Spartacus, the series. And although I think he's a fine actor and does a fine job here, he's a big dude, and I'm kind of used to my Kyle Reese being a little smaller and having to less brute force and more tactical thinking, which I felt as though this Kyle Reese did not rely on a lot of. It was more, of course, we didn't really have the opportunity, but I liked the fact that the Kyle Reese that we knew was so street smart. You know, he knew what to do in order to survive, and it didn't matter how tough he was. It was a matter of being able to think ahead and have a strategy. And of course, we have Emilia Clarke playing Sarah Connor from Game of Thrones. And when I saw that, I wasn't exactly sure, because at this point in time, I'd only probably seen the first couple seasons of Game of Thrones, and we saw a lot of her in season one, but not a whole lot in season two, I felt. And I wasn't exactly sure how she'd pull off this character, because whether people realize it or not, when you think of Sarah Connor now, you think of her from Terminator 2, this really cut, tough as nails female lead who is just, this is... You know, on one hand, if you were the people and she was running your army, you're great. If you were the army, you're not exactly sure, because it would just be like, yeah, you're going to go do this. You're going to go do, know fully well you're going to your death, because it's just about getting the job done. And I wasn't exactly sure how somebody this young would pull it off. And I felt as though in this film, she did a fantastic job of crossing, molding the lines of being a young woman and having her future being kind of dictated to her, and also having to be tough to take on these machines. So that's the cast, and I thought that they all did a really good job. And obviously we have Schwarzenegger in here, who did a real stand-up job with the character and what he had. And it was interesting because you have a character who, even though he's a machine, his skin ages, so he's older. And he's also the caretaker of Sarah Connor in a lot of ways. So with that being said, I have plenty of audio clips here. I know everybody loves the audio clips. So I'm going to, let's start it off here.
Sir, request to join the Colorado offensive.
Need you with me, Reese.
I'm talking about the complete destruction of Skynet, sir.
Colorado unit will succeed. The machines will fall tonight. Right here, the Los Angeles assault is just as important, maybe more.
More important than destroying the Skynet's central core? John, I don't understand why you're leading an attack on a work camp.
Because the camp is a camouflage. Inside the camp is a hangar. Beneath that hangar, Skynet has hidden its final weapon. When Skynet realizes it has lost, it will deploy that weapon to ensure its own survival. We take it tonight, or there is no tomorrow.
Then we'll take it.
You're my right hand, Reese, and I've never thanked you for it.
You don't need to. You gave us all a future, John. I'm gonna use mine. When this is all over, I'm gonna find my parents' house, rebuild it, use my hands for something other than killing. How about you?
Cold beer, good.
And some pretty big plans.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I don't think about it too much.
Yeah, I can see that. I figure whatever happens, it's gotta be better than this.
So in that clip, it's between John and Reese, and they're having a discussion. And obviously, this is the first part of the movie where there is a setup of, you know, what's going to happen. We have, you know, in this movie, we have a lot of the future. We have a lot of the war that's going on. We get to see all this background stuff that was kind of set up in the first one that we just saw little snippets of. But in this one, we get to see quite a bit more of it than we have in past films. So, you know, that the whole idea here is that we're going to see what's going on and how all this comes together. This next clip takes place after they have defeated Skynet. They've come in and they've shut it down. They've gotten rid of all the drones. Basically, they have won at this point, but Skynet has sent somebody back to the past. And, you know, obviously John Connor knows about that, but nobody else does. And obviously he brought Reese along with him because he knows this is the person he's going to send back. Now, this is the first time we actually get to see the time travel machine and all the other films that people have appeared, but we've never seen how the technology works, and we get to see it multiple times in this film. So this is a rather long clip, and I debated about whether or not to include this in here because we're at over 4 minutes. But I felt that it was important because I thought that they did a very concise job of deciding who was going to go back and explaining, you know, setting it up for us. So I feel as though if you were new to the Terminator franchise and you just popped this in and started watching, I don't think you would be lost. You'd have a pretty good understanding of what had happened. They do a pretty good job of explaining that. And I'm just going to play the clip.
We'll need 15 minutes to ready the machine, sir. We're running coordinates. We should have them for you momentarily.
Los Angeles, 1984.
Los Angeles, May 12th, 1984.
Skynet knew it was losing, so it tried to rig the game. It sent a Terminator back to the time before the war.
Then who's the target?
My mother, Sarah Connor. If the machine succeeds, I'll never be born. They'll kill her first. And by doing so, erase every victory we've fought for, including tonight's. There won't be a resistance to challenge the machines. With this one act, Skynet will win.
We can use the technology ourselves. Send someone back.
I don't even know if that'll work.
I'll go, sir.
Right here.
I'll go. I'll volunteer.
I'll go back.
Why should I send you? Over all of them.
Because I'd die for Sarah Connor.
All these people would die for Sarah Connor. What makes you any different?
You know why. Everything you've told me about her, I know her, John. Let me save her. No weapons?
We've measured the magnetic field. It'll rip apart anything not encased in living tissue. Think tinfoil in a microwave, times a few billion. Nothing left but a crater. Oh, no clothes either.
You're just gonna think I'm crazy. You knew the device would be here. You knew what it would be set for. You knew the machines would fall tonight. Just before I go, tell me.
Tell you what?
You see the future?
No one can see the future, Reese.
Okay, then how do you know?
I cheat. Sarah told me so much. Gave me signposts. When I was a kid, it seemed like my mother knew everything.
Must have been great.
Not really. It stops here. Once you go back, my knowledge ends. That's as much as Sarah knew.
So no more cheating.
No more cheating. Time you're going back to, she won't be the warrior that raised me, not yet. She'll be scared and weak. She won't know how to fight or defend herself. Her biggest worry is making rent and tuition. She's a waitress.
What?
Oh. Never mind. Just be ready for the fact that she will need you, but she won't know it.
Okay, so what do I say to her? I mean, even when I tell her who I am, she's not gonna believe me.
Tell her this. Thank you, Sarah, for your courage during the dark years. I can't help you with what you must soon face, except to say the future is not set. There is no fate but that which we make for ourselves. You must be stronger than you imagine you can be. You must survive, or I will never exist. Take care of her for me, Kyle.
That will. I promise you.
And in one of the best sequences of the film, you know, he goes back and right away he is attacked by a T-1000, a liquid metal Terminator, which he has no idea what's going on because he's not familiar with this at all. He's never seen anything like this. His things are just kind of crazy and insane. And so they do this setup ahead of time about how Sarah Connor is going to be this helpless waitress who has no idea what's going on. The T-1000 is basically kicking Reese's butt all over the place. And Sarah comes in to save the day. She crashes through the building in a truck and shoots it and tells him to get in the vehicle. And I have that clip right here. But it's just great. The look of confusion on his face, like, what the heck is going on?
Come with me if you want to live.
Sarah.
Yeah, I know that. You hit your head back there?
Terminator. I don't know the model.
T-1000, liquid metal shape changer. It just needs to touch something to mimic it.
Hey, you know about Terminators? And you know who I am?
You were sent to protect me by John Connor, the leader of the Resistance. My son.
I don't understand. You can't know any of this.
But I do. Listen to me, Reese. Everything's changed. The 1984 John sent you to, it no longer exists.
No, this is all wrong, all right? John sent me here to save you.
From the Terminator that was sent back to kill me, I know, but we already took care of him.
We? Get down!
God! Reese, stop it!
Here to kill you. Stay in the truck.
Oh, great. That's just great.
I did not kill him.
I think it's at this point that a lot of viewers might be a little confused about what's happening, and so we're going to develop that here as it goes on. We're going to get the lowdown on why Sarah is the person she is and not the helpless waitress she's supposed to be. And you know, the idea here is that somebody had sent back Pops, who she calls Pops, who's the Terminator, who's Arnold's character, and back when she was younger to protect her. Nobody knows why or how. They erased those files so that that person cannot be targeted and destroyed. And up until now, this is a solid, you know, this is a solid time travel science fiction story. You know, we just, you know, somebody has been able to do this. We have no idea. And I, you know, it, you would assume that if there's going to be future films, that that would start to become sort of the focus of trying to figure out how to stop all this. I mean, the fact that we're still in a point in time where it's this one guy who was able to bring everybody together in the future. Why, you know, there's other workarounds. You could send somebody else back in time to train somebody else to be the leader that we need. But, you know, there's a lot of minor flaws that you can sit here and nitpick about. But the thing is, the movie, you know, like I said, the reason I decided to do this film is I felt as though it did not get anywhere near enough love or respect for the good, for the story that it is. And I just, you know, I felt as though it was a decent film. I mean, is it the Terminator? No. Is it T2, which seems to be the one that everybody loves? Now, I prefer the Terminator over all the rest. I think that movie was really good. Terminator 2 was kind of its own thing. Yeah, it had a lot of action. We had a lot of good technology and all that. But I think Terminator was, for me, one of the great science fiction stories out there. And it was a nice job of combining action and horror. So the next clip I have is Sarah telling her story and how, you know, what she knows, you know, why she's the way she is and, you know, how she came to be and how come she knows all this stuff that she shouldn't know.
And then I jumped in and I swam. I made it to the dock. And I hid under it. Pops found me. And he pulled me from the water. And he said that he would never let anyone hurt me. He's the only person who has always been there.
Except he's not a person. Right? He's a human-shaped thing that's designed, programmed to gain your trust.
Like if Pops wanted me dead, I'd be dead.
This is what they do, all right? They infiltrate, they get close. Your Pops could have directives built in he doesn't even know about.
Just because you two don't get along.
It's not about getting along. This is about keeping you alive.
Yeah, well, I was raised by a machine to kill cyborgs and survive the nuclear apocalypse. I think I'm doing just fine. Thanks.
Now, that clip takes place in the back of a prisoner transport. Sarah and Reese go to the future. And they have a big, long conversation. Again, this is part of this trying to update the franchise to the now. And they have a big, big debate about where they're supposed to go. And Sarah wants to go to 1997 and stop Judgment Day. Now, the way they're able to do this is they're able to build a time machine. And, you know, we have the original scene where the Terminator comes back from the first film, only this time Pops is waiting for him and Sarah's waiting for him and are able to destroy him before he does any harm. They need him because they need the chip to run the time machine. There is a what I thought was a really great scene, and I felt this scene was a one of those scenes where they don't have to hold your hand and guide you through everything. And I think as though, you know, sometimes movies spend a lot of time doing that. We have this great scene where the liquid metal Terminator has followed them. They set a trap. They go to this this old abandoned factory, and they bring the original Terminator here. That's you know, been damaged because they're gonna need a chip for it. And we see Sarah go into this room, and something drips from the ceiling, and she quickly takes off her coat and sprays some kind of spray on. And you realize it must be some kind of toxic thing. We're not quite sure what it is. Well, when the T-1000 comes after them, she starts blowing holes in the roof, in the ceiling above her, and here it's acid, and it's what eats through this Terminator and is able to destroy. Well, Arnie grabs it and holds it out till it dissolves, and so his flesh is damaged. He cannot go to the future with them because his flesh will not regrow, so he's going to wait until he'll meet them in the future. So Sarah and Reese are captured. They appear into the middle of a highway. After the argument about whether to go to 1997, John says we have to go to 2017. And when she wants to argue about it and fight about it and everything, he finally convinces her to trust him that at some point during his journey, he reached a nexus point where he can remember a past that wasn't necessarily his. So things have been altered. It's not the past that he knows. It's a past that he's unfamiliar with. But he knows that Judgment Day doesn't happen in this past. So he knows that 2017 is still here. It still exists. And Skynet has not taken control yet. And I felt as though this was a pretty good explanation because you have a nexus point where you can see all that, you know, you're seeing multiple variations. And who's to say that you can't reach that point again and see every variation of time. But for whatever reason, he remembers his past and it's a big deal. And that's kind of it's the nexus of the movie, right? Because without this, then you're stuck in the same time frame you've made in Terminator 1 and 2. And so this kind of breaks it out of that mold and changes things up a little bit. And so, you know, really, you can have 1, 2 in this movie, and it all, I think it all makes sense. The only thing that is confusing to me is if they shut down this Terminator, the original Terminator that came back, then the whole original scene in the police station never happened where he comes in, he says, I'll be back, and he destroys the whole police station and kills all these people. Yet O'Brien, who's a character who's been in the film for a while, somehow knows about the Terminators and the time travel and stuff like this. And I don't feel as though that's fully explained how this character can know these things because he never actually experienced them. So I felt that was kind of a hole that they needed to explain. If anybody can explain that to me, man, feel free to email me because I got a little bit lost in that. And I tried to watch it again and try to figure out how I had this information and I could not grasp it. So they go to the future and that's where all of this takes place. And, you know, the whole idea here is that Genesis is this thing they keep announcing and Genesis is Skynet. And it's the first, you know, well, I mean, there's not even like a gradual buildup. It is just, you know, we are in Skynet times. Everybody has a phone, everybody's connected, and that's the general idea. So the two characters are a little beat up, so they're in a hospital and they're getting some stitches and staples and whatnot, getting cleaned up and, you know, and they're waiting for Homeland Security to come in and take them off their hands because nobody wants to deal with these two people. They think they're nut jobs. But we find out at this point what Genesis is, because up until now, we're not really sure what it is.
Genesis is an operating system? What's it do?
Genesis does everything. My phone will link to my tablet, will link to my computer, will link to my car. Everything in my life uploaded and online 24/7. Totally connected.
Connected to what?
Doctors, excuse us, please.
Now, during this time, somebody comes in. They hear somebody's voice, and here it's John. So John Connor has come back, and they are very confused how he's here. So I'm just going to play this short clip, and then we'll explain more about how John was able to be here in the past.
It's good to see you, Kyle.
You're alive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course I am. Survival is what you taught me. Hi, Mom.
Danny Dyson, son of inventor Miles Dyson, is the face of Cyberdyne and the creator of Genesis. Danny, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Look, Genesis is more than an operating system. It's more than a lifestyle tool. It's the future.
Genesis isn't just for consumers. Its integration into our military is leading some to ask whether our reliance on machines could go too far.
Get a little news clip there of them interviewing the person behind Genesis. And we find out that John Connor is the man behind that man who is making all this possible. Now, what happens is that John gets Kyle and Sarah out of the hospital, out of the hospital. I think it's just the hospital. I don't know. There's cops there, Homeland Security there, et cetera, et cetera. They're having a conversation with him when Arnie shows up and shoots him, and they're all freaking out, and they're going to kill Arnie because they think his programming has fine. I mean, Kyle doesn't trust him at all. He still thinks he has some kind of programming that nobody knows about that is going to make him, you know, that's so ingrained that he doesn't even know about it. And so, therefore, he's going to go and try to it's going to pop up later on. And he finally decides, oh, your programming was here so that you knew to kill John. That's what your programming is. And they have, like, a showdown between the three of them. And then suddenly John Connor pops back up after he's been shot, and they realize that he's not human, that he is something else, and they're not sure what he is. And obviously Kyle, who's very close to him, is not handling this very well. But they escape, and during the escape they have a conversation where Arnie was able to, I'm going to call him Pops, since Pops is able to kind of scan him and get some information, he's able to deduce exactly who or what John is.
Whatever they did to him, we need to reverse it. We need to get him back.
He's not even human. We don't know what the hell he is.
I do. At the end of the war, Skynet was trying to develop a new type of infiltration unit. By infecting human subjects with machine-faced matter, it restructures and rebuilds human tissue on a cellular level for maximum combat utility.
Skynet's made John into a Terminator.
Yes, Calories.
They were trying to make a machine that could think like a man.
But the experiments failed. The human subjects went insane and died.
Yeah, well, John's got the crazy part down. Does he have any weaknesses?
Matter coheres using a magnetic field. Disrupting that field may trap him.
Right, but if he can be cured...
Negative. His body was replaced on a cellular level. There is no cure.
You don't know that.
Reese.
No, I'm not going to let a machine tell me what's possible. You said all the other subjects died, right? Well, that means John's one of a kind. He's unique. All right, there's no way I know what he's capable of.
You're right, and that's what makes him so dangerous. John is not humanity's last hope anymore. He's Skynet's.
And that is that. So we understand now that John is Skynet. And you get to see a scene when you have Doctor Who go and he's actually part of the team that originally in the beginning takes over the Skynet structure, and he's the one who attacks John at the end and infects him. And if you watch the special features of this, there are some features of him. You know, there's some features of Matt Smith being this Skynet. You know, and in the film, he's more of a you know, you see him in that one scene, but as they interact with him later on, he's more of a hologram. But he is just having a freaking field day playing the bad guy. It is just so fun to watch him, because I don't know that you needed a really strong actor to play this character, since most of the time you don't get to see a lot of his facial features and he's playing a computer. But when you watch him in the special features doing the, you know, being the bad guy thing and talking to the characters and egging them on and just being a general pain in the butt to them as they're trying to shut down Skynet, he's just having a field day. He loves playing the villain. So the next clip I have is Pops. Oh, you know, he's had a lot of time waiting for these guys to appear in 2017. So he's been stockpiling weapons, and they go to the place where he does this. And, you know, naturally, John shows up, and we have this great scene where he is taking some quotes from the first film about not stopping and, you know, things like that. And it's when I think this is the point in time where Reese realizes there's not going to be a way to save him, that this is no longer John. There's no going back. He is this machine, you know, and he's not going to be human again. There's no way to uninfect him and undo what has been done.
I wouldn't remember.
The place you spent so much time with Grandpa? Shoot first. The mother I remember would be proud. She...
You... taught me everything. I know you. Who you are, what you'll do. You can't run from me. I'll always find you.
John, fight this. It doesn't have to go down this way.
There's a momentum to time, Kyle. Things that want to happen. Like I always survive, and you always die. Or... you can fight with me, Kyle. Like we always have. There's a storm coming and it won't be stopped.
But it has to be. You know what will happen, you better than anyone.
I can't be bargained with. Can't be reasoned with.
John, please!
I don't feel pity or remorse or fear.
John, please!
And I absolutely will not stop ever until Skynet rules this world.
Rule this.
And you have to have that one-liner in there, you know, to for people to grab onto. But she shoots him with a grenade and then shoots him with a couple more grenades and blows up the whole freaking place. And then you have one of the best scenes of the film, the action scene wise, when they're they steal a bus, a school bus, and they're all on there fighting. It's a really great scene and something that they advertised quite a bit in the trailer, showing the action and the amount of effort they put into this. But again, it just you know, everything worked out action wise in this film. I mean, there wasn't anything I had any complaints with, and they did a pretty good job. Now, The part of this, you know, film, we were covering a lot of the same territory we covered in Terminator 2 with whether or not a human and a machine can form a bond. And, you know, this is still, you know, you got to look at the two different characters here. You have Sarah, who's been raised by this machine, and the machine is unique. And you have Kyle Reese, who the humans are unique because there's more machines than humans, so he doesn't trust them. And so they've kind of come to a point where they're both where, you know, Kyle obviously understands that, you know, Pops does care about Sarah as much as a machine can care about her. And we have, you know, we're in an area where he's stockpiling stuff. Not only does he have all the weapons and all the things to make weapons and all this just giant piles of arms everywhere, but he also has pictures that Sarah drew of the two of them and like her favorite music and things like that. So that, you know, obviously he's still thinking about her and her well-being, both physically and mentally. So we get toward we find out that magnets are what the thing that you can do to help to lessen the cohesion of John. So the Terminator, Power Pops, has like some magnetic gauntlets he makes, and they fight and et cetera, and are trying to blow up Skynet before it goes online, and it's getting closer and closer and closer and closer. Genesis, right? I say Skynet, but it's advertises Genesis, obviously. And so they're trying to blow up the building in the mainframe and destroy everything. Pops is on the construction crew. And so the game plan here is that he was able to make a safe room and add her name and ID to it so that if when things do, it's time to blow everything up, they can go in there and they will be okay. They will survive the blast. And so you have the big battle at the end between them and John. And finally, Arnie, he takes John into the time travel chamber because Skynet is building another one of those, obviously. And, once they activate it, it's going to, you know, it will destroy Pops because he's not covered in flesh. And you know, it would just pull him apart as well as it pulling John apart as well. So that's what we get to. But we just have this final scene with all the characters before, you know, everything, you know, everything is blown up. And you have this final scene where it shows that Pops does indeed care for Sarah.
Kyle Reese, activate the field generator.
No, Pops, no, not with you inside. You know what will happen. Pops, please, please, Pops!
Skynet is almost free.
I cannot hold John Connor much longer. Kyle Reese, protect my Sierra.
No! 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 No!
And then you have the kicker that sets it up for more films if they want to do them. I don't know why they wouldn't want to do them. I understand this one didn't do as well as they wanted it to. But I think that, you know, it's something that, you know, could very well be done. I felt as though this film set up a future that, you know, is uncertain and with, you know, certain things that they could do. And you're not, even though it looks as though John Connor is pulled apart in a field, well, what happens is Sarah and Kyle make it to the safe room, and Pops gets blown to bits, and his chip falls into the molten metal that they are putting together for it's to make more, to make T-1000s, because this is a, you know, obviously a lab that John is putting together. He is Skynet, so he's working on all this technology. Well, what happens is at the end, Pops comes back and he has the abilities of a T-1000. He just says he's upgraded, and they go and they find the young Kyle Reese, and he has a conversation with the young Kyle Reese, and he says, "I need you to remember, just tell yourself this every day, Genesis is Skynet, Genesis is Skynet." So that's part of what ties into everything, you know, into time travel, and it makes your head hurt sometimes with all the changing around and whatnot. And, you know, the end, basically the very last like line at the end, I hated it. I felt as though it was super cheesy. And basically that Sarah says the future is uncertain, you know, or future's not set, something like that. But it just wasn't, I didn't feel as though it was put together very, very well. I thought that was the worst part of the whole movie. They could have done without that last line, the way they put it together. I think they were trying to recreate that, the same ending as the 84's Terminator, and it did not work. It just kind of fell apart there, because with the original Terminator, you're following Sarah Connor through the whole movie is about her and about her trying to survive and what she'll do in the future, where the second film was all about John Connor and kind of his upbringing. And this film is more about Skynet. And so we didn't really have, you know, they're relying a lot on you knowing the other film to have feelings for Sarah Connor. I don't feel as though her character was developed well enough for me to be like, oh man, you know, this, she's living through all this turmoil and this and that. Where the first film, we had Sarah Connor, we get to see her life, or the kind of day-to-day drudgery of, you know, being a waitress and just making ends meet and things like that, only to be thrown into this crazy world where the Sarah Connor we see in this film is already, you know, she's all about death and destruction and you know, killing cyborgs and, you know, kind of knowing a game plan and things like that, where the day-to-day stuff really didn't settle in with her. So again, just my opinion. Now, you know, like I said, I think that the movie it does not get enough credit. I think that there's a lot of hate, and I don't really get why there is, but those of you listening to the show know that I like the films I like, and there's not a whole lot of stuff that I don't like, and I try not to be overly critical. Like, I don't really do reviews of movies that are horrible, because every movie is somebody's baby. They put a lot of time and effort into it, and I'm not here to destroy things. I'm just here to recommend things, and I recommend that if you haven't given this film a chance, please do. If you have seen it and you really didn't like it, go back and give it another whirl and try to figure out why, you know, you think that it is a bad movie. Because I think that the story is all there. I think it's relatively sound. Like I said, there are some problems. I still can't wrap my mind around the O'Brien thing. And it's got plenty of action. It certainly was entertaining. I mean, a lot of the action scenes I went back and watched again when I was trying to pull the audio files, ended up getting caught up in it all over again. And, you know, that's the one thing with doing the show, that pulling the audio files is the thing that takes the most time, and trying to remember where they're all at. I mean, I love recording, but I want to have a topic, so I do the films, and it's just that's what ends up being the holdup in things. So anyway, that is Terminator Genesis, and I hope everybody enjoyed this part of it. This part of the show. I want to talk about a couple things real quick before I wind it up here. This is probably the first time in as long as I can remember that for some reason, I'm not even trying to figure out how this even happened, but I managed to make it to the theater three times in like a two-week period to see films that I wanted to see. And it's so weird to me that I don't go to the movies very often. Usually when we go as a family. And it's, you know, it's kind of expensive. Even if you go during a matinee, I mean, you know, you take four people to a film and it's like $60-$70. And right now I have two kids in college and everybody's schedules is so erratic that there's not an evening for us to really get together and go see a movie. It's damn near impossible. So I was actually able to see three films. I'm still kind of surprised about it. I actually, for the first time in a long time, I've seen everything that's at the theater that I wanted to see, except for Logan. I missed that one, and it's on its way out. So I'll catch that on Blu-ray when it comes out. But I was able to see Power Rangers. I was able to see Ghost in the Shell, and I was able to see Kong Skull Island. And of those films, I want to mention, well, Power Rangers was a fun film, and you can see we're trying to cross over from the super kid-friendly stuff to something that, that more people will enjoy. With Power Rangers, the best scenes were with them when they weren't in costume. I thought that it was a good film. I really enjoyed it. I recommend it. It's not going to change your life. It's not groundbreaking. The stuff with the Zords I felt was kind of boring, but I felt that they did a really good job developing the characters, and that's the part of the film I liked the most. But I want to talk about Skull Island, and I don't want to give any spoilers here. I just want to say that I think that this film was one of those movies that, I really connected with it from a film standpoint of you have a very simple premise, which is that there's an island and you want to investigate the island, okay? And, you know, there's something you find out in the first 5 minutes of the film. So if you don't want any spoilers, skip this part, but it just, this is the setup. That we are in it, we're entering, it's the end of the Vietnam War, and because of satellite photos, we're able to discover that this island's here. Up until now, it's been covered with clouds, and everybody's been avoiding it. You know, there's like a lot of fog and storms and everything, so everybody avoids it because obviously it's a bad place for trying to take your ship through by, you know. So the ideas here is that we want to get there before the Russians do. And so you have all these characters who all have different drives for why they're going here. And that is what makes the movie. The movie is that we're going to go investigate this island. Everybody has the same thing. We're all going to go investigate this island. We're going to go here. We're going to check it out. But every single individual in the film has their own reason for wanting to do that. And we kind of look at their stories, and that's what makes the film. Otherwise, the movie's just kind of boring, right? You know, when we're here, we discovered it. Okay, you know. But man, this movie just kind of knocked my socks off. It was like way, way better than I thought it was going to be. And I would put this in a top 10 movies I've seen in a very, very long time. You know, it might not stay there, but for right now, and I'm not sure about the rewatchability. I'd have to sit down and watch it again when it comes out on digital. But really knocked my socks off. Great soundtrack. And if you have Spotify, if you do a search for Kong Skull Island, you can find a playlist. Not really a soundtrack available. They had a lot of that great 70s music, you know, a lot of CCR, stuff like that. Really enjoyed the film. I thought it was way better than I thought. And I can't decide if the reason I enjoyed it so much is because it was much better than I thought. But the more I think about it, the more I think this is how you put a film together. You take a simple premise, and you the characters are what brings the movie to life, and they did an excellent job with that. Really liked it. Saw Ghost in a Shell, and I always kind of chuckle. Every time my wife and I get an opportunity to go to a movie by ourselves, it always ends up, usually something I want to see. There's not anything out that she really wants to see. And it seems like the opportunity doesn't happen very often. So I was like, let's go see this. Yes, I want to see this. I'm like, I can go without you. It's no big deal. She's like, no, I'll go. You know, so we decided to go see, I decided to go see Ghost in the Shell because I wanted to see it. I like the anime, and I've been wanting to see this movie since I first saw it advertised. Now, I like Scarlett Johansson. I think she does a great action character. I'm not going to get into all the whole whitewashing BS again because it's ridiculous. I can't believe that they had a white woman play a robot. Wow. Anyway, see, that's just me being passive aggressive. But what I liked about the film is definitely it's very American. They definitely they simplify the subject matter because of the anime, it can get kind of convoluted. And I enjoyed the movie. It had a lot of good action. They had some pacing issues. There were some parts where it was kind of slow. But, you know, my wife's sitting there, you know, we watched and everything. And I said, well, what'd you think? And she said, yeah, it was good. I liked it. And I was like, you know, every time we go see a movie, I swear to God, it always ends up being something that at the end, I'm like, man, there's no way that she enjoyed this. So, you know, I'm glad she went with me. I'm glad we got a chance to have a little date night. But next time, I think I'm just going to tell her to pick the movie, and I don't care what it is. It can even be a Nicholas Sparks film. I'm probably going to blow my brains out, but she does this for me. And I was trying to like sit there and think of like all the films, the movies that we had gone to see together since we had, you know, since we had kids, you know, and you don't get an opportunity very often, you know, there's, you know, I have nieces and nephews and, you know, my own family. And it's like, you're always busy doing stuff. You never get an opportunity to go see something. You try to see something that everybody would enjoy if you're going to the theater, not just the adults. And I was trying to think of like the last few films. And honestly, I can't remember. The last movie I remember us seeing together was, oh God, the last X-Files movie, which was freaking horrible. And we went and we sat there and I kept looking at my watch and I kept looking at her and we got done. That was one of those movies I was like, so what'd you think of that? And she's like, it was, what'd you think? And I'm like, okay, you hate it as much as I did. So, it never really works out for us. All right. So with that being said, I decided that one of the things I wanted to do on this show was top five lists, because only because when I do them, then people can email me lists and get me, give me ideas of things to watch. Because God knows I don't have enough things to watch or read, right? So the top five lists, I decided that the top five list that I wanted to do is it's been in the back of my mind is top five anthology series. Now these can be, an anthology series to me is a series that of different shows. So like, I know some people say that Fargo is an anthology series, but I disagree, because you have the same characters, some of the same characters every season. So therefore I disagree that that's an anthology series. I mean, an anthology series like Tales from the Crypt. Okay. That to me is an anthology series. So my top five, favorite anthology series, and this is actually a little harder than you think, because I can think of three or four right off the bat, boom, 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 you know, that are just like top of my list. And then it gets a little more difficult, because I was going to do a top 10 and I'm like, I can't even think of 10 that I've seen most or all of. So those of you that are longtime listeners to the show probably already know what number one is. I know a lot of people are going to disagree with this, because number one should be The Twilight Zone. But the anthology series that I really enjoy, and as much as I enjoy The Twilight Zone, the anthology series that really knocked my socks off, and I'm still angry that there's not a complete box set of it anywhere, or you can't even buy all the seasons anywhere, is The Outer Limits, and that was the remake of The Outer Limits. Man, I love that series. I thought it hit on a lot of really good science fiction stories and ideas, and really enjoyed the heck out of it. So that's number, and I don't necessarily know these are in any particular order, but I think that that's probably my favorite. Like if somebody had the opportunity to give me like a series, I didn't have to pay for it, and they were like, here, you can pick one, and that was available, I would probably pick that. Although I have to say the fact that it's not available is one of the reasons that I would pick it, right? I felt as though the first several seasons of that were really strong, really well done, and I liked all the themes that were in there. The next one would have to be The Twilight Zone. That was when I was first introduced to like half-hour-long science fiction, crazy alternate universe type deal. Really enjoyed the heck out of that, and still do. And I don't know that I've seen them all. I don't think that I have. I don't have it on DVD or box set or anything like that, or Blu-ray. I would like to at some point, but you know, there's enough to watch right now that, and I've seen all the best ones. So, I don't know if that's something I'm going to pursue, but man, it was one of those things that were so great when you were younger, and it still holds up today. You know, those series. The next one is going to be Tales from the Crypt. As much as there were some crappy episodes, there are episodes that just were really groundbreaking in my mind, of things that, you would read about in the book, but you've never seen committed to any kind of film. And I like the half hour format. It worked really well for that. It was something I always look forward to watching. When I didn't have HBO, so when it did pop up somewhere, I was at somebody's house that had HBO and it was on, I'd always sit down and watch it if I had the opportunity. Just love that show. Now have a collection of that and have not gone back and watched through all of them. And I know that a lot of them have been on different stations now, edited, but really enjoyed that show. It's always going to be in my top five list because I felt as though that was something that they took the time and effort to put some money and get some good talent and put it together, unlike some things that you had, like, you know, Monsters and Tales from the Dark Side and stuff like that, which are good on their own, don't get me wrong, but they really didn't have a big budget, you know. Tales from the Dark Side is an example, I think, of a series where they just took an idea and were able to tell a story without putting a bunch of money into it and making you think about it, and I really enjoyed that as well. That did not make my list, but it would if I was doing it in top 10, obviously, because you're running out of anthology series. The Masters of Horror makes my list. Really unique hour-long format. Again, not a full set available of this. It's questionable the quality of the Blu-ray set that's currently popping up, and it's not a set. It's sold like in season one and season two kind of deal. I've seen all these. I enjoyed them all, and I thought that it was nice to have this little hour-long horror movie for people to watch. Some of these were really good. Some of these were just okay. I didn't feel as though any were really bad. But it was a project. It was a something that they tried, and I'm glad that they did. They did try a Masters of Science Fiction. I think it was on ABC, and I felt as though that just kind of fell on its face. It didn't really work for me. But Masters of Horror, very much so. Really did a good job with that. The last one. And I had to think about this because there's a couple of different ones that I would put in this, and Tales from the Dark Side almost made the cut. But the two that are, they're so very different, but I felt once again that it was something that they were willing to take a chance on. And that was Perversions of Science, which is on HBO, which I felt as though it had some very good themes, but at the same point in time, there were some comedy elements thrown in there. Because, you know, we did, they weren't afraid to laugh at some of the science fiction out there or some of the tropes. They weren't afraid to throw them in there. And obviously, Perversions of Science, very much rated R, a lot of the episodes, a lot of nudity and graphic violence. But I really like that. And the Hammer House of Horror is also another one that I liked a lot. Obviously, that's a little bit different. You know, these two shows could not be more different. One is, I don't want to say cerebral, but Hammer House of Horror is kind of stuffy, and it is. There's a lot of psychological type elements to that, where Perversions of Science is very visceral in a lot of ways, and I can't decide which one it is, so I'm cheating because I can do that. So it's my top 5/top 6 list of anthologies. So if you have any you'd like to add. You know, obviously, Outer Limits is a decent one, the original. And I actually enjoyed the Twilight Zone from the 80s. That was actually pretty decent. There was a lot of bum episodes in there, but there were some that held up pretty well. Some that made me think that I've gone back and rewatched and realized that they are just not done very well. But the thing is that they creeped into my mind. They kind of stayed there, and that's kind of what you want, right? And then you have, like I said, you have like Monsters and Tales from the Dark Side and some of those shows that they put on that didn't have a huge budget available, but still very much enjoyable for the time, you know, because we didn't get to get a lot of that stuff. Anyway, that's my top 5 list. I'm going to work on one for the next time. I'm try to endeavor very hard to make this a weekly podcast, but that is not going to work out. I'm going to shoot for weekly and know that I'll be happy if I can get 2 out a month. It's just the time is not there, and I don't want to give it up. I really enjoy doing the recording. I really enjoy talking to the diggers out there in the community. And I am trying so hard to get more people on to do a co-host type thing, which is what I wanted to start doing. But it's just that things are incredibly busy in my life. And when you have, we're at kind of at that nexus point where we're heading into the second or the final part of this semester for college, and I don't get to see my kid enough as it is. And so, like, when the opportunity presents itself and I'm like, well, I can record, and I plan on recording, and then she's like, hey, you know, I have like an hour, you want to go to lunch? Well, we're going to go to lunch because that's just the way it is. So, but that not going to go away, not going to pod fade, hate that term, but just letting everybody know that I'm endeavoring to put out as many shows as I can, and I'm sorry about the fact that it is not on a regular schedule. I would like that to happen, but I wouldn't hold my breath about that. With that being said, anybody interested in being on a show, and if you have a flexible schedule, if you have Mondays and Tuesdays off, preferably in the day, that's the time to be able to do it. Let me know. I know I have some people lined up, but the movies that we've picked, I haven't watched yet, so I'm still working on that. And that is it. Thanks for taking the time to download and to listen. Thanks for any feedback you thought about sending, any feedback you actually send, which you can do at tosci-fi-dig@gmail.com. Also, if you go to the website, there's various other ways to contact me. Until next time, over and out.